5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
It's the new Panic Room. It's the show other shows want to be, and the show that authors want to be on. All-new Panic Room radio show is brought to you by HellboundBooks.com.
Well, good evening, everyone. Oh, it is Panic Room episode 272. And I always forget what day it is, 21st of April, 2022. And it just seems like we were doing this last week. COVID alert there. Not really. It's just funny, people forget that, you know, they still do colds and flu now. You know, it's not like, you know, every sniffle you get is asked to be COVID. And the next person that asks me if it's COVID, I'm just going to cough in the face, I think. Because I think that's, which is, I think now is technically an act of terrorism. And you can be executed for it. So there is that. But anywho, I've missed this. So here we go. Yee-haw, New York City. Oh. How are you this evening?
Oh, I'm wonderful. You know, I don't have anything to complain about. I'm good.
You usually find something. You usually rustle something up to moan about, to be honest. But
it's if I try really hard, I might be able to.
Got it. Sorry, I'm plagued by it. I've had the door open today because it's been nice. Of course, all the bloody flies come flying in, but it'll not be long. Another month, and it'll be too damn hot to leave the doors open. So it's nice. I can sit working, and there'll be a puppy's running in and out and doing all of that. So yeah, it's fun.
We've had such crazy weather. Just two nights ago, I think we had like a frost warning, and it'll be like almost 80 tomorrow. So I'm like, what's going on here? It's kind of, you know, and then we planted some flowers at the, whenever you plant flowers, when's that, like in the fall or something. And they came up and they're all pretty, and now they're dying because it's been cold again. So yeah, that kind of sucks. I was like all excited. I'm like, spring is sprung, and now they're all dead.
Well, it's been this week pretty much. I mean, today was a nice cool day. It got that dropped down to like 79 because it was a bit overcast. We had a bit of a breeze. It was just quite nice, pleasant, you know. But it's been in the 90s pretty much 79. All week. So it was a nice balmy, cool, you know, 79 degrees. I had to go put a sweater on. You know, it's This is Texas, and it'll not be long before it'll be too bloody hot, you know, and everybody will be whining that so the electricity bills start creeping up, you know.
You sound wonderful, by the way.
I'm sounding. Funny. I was talking to my agent today, and he's saying that I sounded even more gorgeous. Yeah, husky and sort of gravelly and
sexy,
that, but
and you know, and I said that
exactly. There's nothing says raw sex better than phlegm, coughing up phlegm. You know, and then it's at the back of your throat. What do? I spit it out? No, I'm just going to eat this. You know, the worst of it gets to dinner time, and you don't feel hungry. I'm a bit. What are you eating today? Yes, not pretty much.
So gross.
So no, that's been my week. But everybody, is it COVID? I mean, my agent said, because I spoke to him last week as I was just started feeling unwell. I think he phoned me to make sure I hadn't died, I think. And, you know, and he said, you got tested, did you? Well, no, because he went through this a couple of weeks ago. And he went, he felt bad, he went, he got tested, and he positive got COVID, and said, well, what now? Oh, well, nothing. And I said, well, what's
right?
You know, get off my couch, drag my ass out, go get tested. And if it is COVID, for him to say, no, you need to go home and sit on your couch and wait it out, which is what I was doing anyway. So just cut out all that bullshit. You know, what's the fucking point? You know?
Yeah. I totally agree, yeah, and I don't know, we've had the discussions over and over about COVID, and not a whole lot made a whole bunch of sense, but I was sick just a couple weeks ago, just a cold, and I was, you know, it's got to run its course, you know, and my kid was sick last week, just a cold, but
a bug of some sort, you know what kids are like, and they shifted it pretty fast, and like you say, it's a cold. I'm at the end of it now. I'm finally feeling human, and I said I had the first decent night's sleep in about a week last night, which was kind of nice. So that helps a lot, actually. That does help a lot. A damn good night's sleep is. I'm not ashamed to admit it. I had this bottle of CBD gummies in that I've just looked at with disdain. Cause I was actually some girlfriend brought them ages ago and left them, and I thought, let me try one, because when I'm ill, melatonin doesn't even touch the sides, so I'm not even bothered with that. Chewed them on before bedtime, and whether it was coincidence or not, I did sleep well. So I'm now. I made the mistake to tell my daughter. She's now worried that I'm a rampant drug addict. You know, I'm now a hopeless addict because I had this gummy last night, and that's now my life's done. You know, it's Skid Row.
You should, like, walk around
now
the house with a beer in your hand or a whiskey bottle and in your robe or something to really freak out.
Well, to be fair, unless I'm actually going somewhere, you know, I wear my comfy pajama bottoms and a sleeveless t-shirt. And I can, sometimes for days, sometimes I realize, okay, I've not been any, you know, if I don't need to go anywhere, I don't go anywhere, you know, and I realize I've been in these comfy pants for like 4 days now. You know, and it's
well,
like,
you know, you're sick, so it's ex- but
no,
you know,
no, this is when you, no, this is when I'm not sick. This is normally. This is normally.
Well, yeah. Mm. Well, I was going to say, you know, all you need to do is take a shower, get some clean clothes, and you will feel so much better. But
see, that's
no,
the other thing. Showers is another thing. You know, and someday I'll get to a point. You know, I sit and think, when did I last have a shower? And when I can't remember. How far, when it was, maybe it's time I sort of, you know, got in the shower a little bit, but I know, I'm sounding disgusting now, I know, I'm just a hideous person, but this is the problem with, you know, when you work at home, you're on your own, and, just, you know, I get up and I work, and then, you know, when the kids are not around, you know, I get up and I work and feed myself when I remember, go to bed. Get up, well, and you know, rinse and repeat, and that is it, you know, it's a sad life. I get a lot done, I have to say, you know, without all the time wasted, you know, on personal hygiene and popping out and and stuff like that. But I try to give myself a reason to go. You know, I've run out of dog, you know, running out of dog food, or you know, I need to go and, you know. But, oh, well, it's all good stuff, you know, all good stuff. But, you know, when someone of my age, I'm sure he only phoned today, just because they've not heard from me since last Friday. I think he just phoned to make sure I've not died. Because we usually talk a couple of times a week, and I just haven't felt like it. No, I just want to be left alone. You know, I just want to be on the sofa. And but I had a great weekend, actually, because I just binge-watched just stuff. Thrillers. I found a great two-part documentary on Frank Sinatra on Netflix, which was great. I enjoyed that. All the tunes and all his lifestyle and all the rest of that was fun. And a great British legal drama called Anatomy of a Scandal. That was brilliant. That was very good. David E. Keller was involved in that, so that was a good one. And yeah, there's been a couple of things that I've got getting into Altered Carbon now. It's been on my to watch list for a while. I'm really enjoying it.
Nice.
Really enjoying it. So yeah, it was a good excuse to sit and watch just stuff, you know?
Yes. Yes. Did you have a nice Easter? Did you guys have a nice, you know, bunny holiday, or wouldn't that just last
week? I bought them the chocolate, and we didn't really. We used to do all the Easter egg hunts and all the rest of it and that, but they're a bit old for that now. But so my daughter just tapped me up for a ton of chocolate. So it's the thing, my son is not a big chocolatey person. I bought him some mini eggs. It's funny, in past years, you know, I bought him, you know, we've got an Easter basket and everything, and then it sort of gets to sort of August, September time. It's like, are you going to eat those Kit Kats? So I end up eating it anyway. It's just not I haven't got a big sweet tooth.
My kids did not know that I was doing, you know, a basket. Last year, my daughter had a cow. She's 23 years old and just had a cow because I wasn't going to do a basket. So I did one. And this year, the look on her face when I came out with the baskets in my hand, she was so excited. Candy. And she doesn't, I don't even think she likes candy that much, but it's just the thought and a little stuff, something.
I guess there's a lot to be said for, you know, family traditions and that sort of thing. But
it was nice.
Kind of sweet. But bearing in mind, only a couple of weeks before, I because of my daughter's 13th birthday, I spent a small fortune on a birthday. So she kind of understood.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. No, and I made a nice big meal and you know, family over, and it was nice.
Beautiful.
Yeah. And you know, the key, which I have just only the last year or so that I've actually realized this. If you make a lot of the stuff the night before, the day of the holiday, you're not running around like a chicken with your head cut off, and it makes it so much easier. And so it was nice. I had everything came together perfect. Everything was nice and warm at the same time. It was great. And I didn't burn the corn. I mean, I don't know if it's a thing. I do steamed. I steamed the corn. And like 2 years in a row now.
You burn corn. You know, that cannot be easy.
Yes.
You must put a lot of effort into that.
That's a double boiler, and I don't put enough water, I guess, at the bottom. And then, like, you know, half an hour later, we're like, what's that smell? And then I'm like, shit, and I, you know, it's burnt. And last year, they're like, it's just going to be like a tradition now that you just burn the corn. So,
well, there you go.
Yeah.
These family traditions are important. But, I'm assuming that we've got stuff going on this evening. We have guests in the green room.
We do. I'm very excited. We have a great show tonight. Let's see. Well, I'm just going to introduce our first guest, and you push the button, and we're going to, have a great time. How's that sound?
That sounds phenomenal. You've really got to work hard on entertaining me tonight. I'm tired. I'm still not 100%. Even though I didn't have a good night's sleep last night. And I did have cocoa as well, so maybe it's a combination of cocoa and CBD.
Aww.
There you see, but I might have another cocoa tonight. I might make me half time. I might make myself a nice cocoa. There you go.
Great, it does.
This sounds lovely.
All right.
Okay, so who have we got first?
Our first guest of the evening, we have senior contributor, horror book reviewer at horrorbound.net, and author Joe Scipione. Woo!
Hello.
Hi.
Yay.
That was a pretty nice introduction. I could get used to that.
There you go. How are you this evening?
Not too bad. How are you guys?
We're good.
It's Thursday. I always get so excited because tomorrow's Friday, and you know I live for the weekends now. So yay, yep. TGI Friday. So where are you calling in from, Joe?
So I live in Illinois. We're in the suburbs just outside of Chicago.
Is your weather all crazy over there too?
Yeah, it's been really crazy. We had snow the other day. Today it was like 80 degrees, 75 degrees, 80 degrees. So I never know
what
we're going to get.
Yeah, it's the same. You know, and then James is talking about, you know, oh, it's balmy 79 degrees.
Yeah.
Oh, I saw my weather app yesterday, and it said, I think on Saturday it's going to be 83, and I'm just like, oh, it's disgusting. I mean, I really like the cool weather. I do. You can put a sweater on and be happy. And, you know, when it gets so hot, there's only so much you can take off and still be legal, so... I'd rather have it cool.
Yeah,
than hot,
now you tell me.
Right.
I'm a warm weather guy. I like the warm weather.
I like the warm. Having grown up in England, you know, we're not famed for our sunny weather. I do like it. And yeah, okay, it gets unbearably hot here sometimes, but you just stay in. I mean, it's not difficult, you know. But I do. I'm with you, John. I like the warm. I think as I'm getting older. I'm enjoying the warmth a little bit more.
Yeah.
So, Joe, you're here to talk to us about your book, Zoo, Eight Tales of Animal Horror. Tell us a little bit about it. Right?
Yeah.
Right?
So I kind of like keep a list of all the short story ideas that I have. And then as I was looking at a list, I realized a lot of them revolved around animals. So I kind of sat down and I wrote a couple, and then I wrote a couple more, and pretty soon I had these eight stories. Well, it's seven short stories, and then one is a novella. And I figured they would look really good as a collection, so I submitted it to D&T Publishing, And then they accepted it and it's coming out. It's out on Godless now, and then next week on the 29th, it hits Amazon.
Exciting. What kind of animals are in your stories?
I didn't want to do, like, the regular scary animals, like bats and spiders. I wanted to try to do something different. So there's a fish story, Herring Run, wasps, mosquitoes. I try to hit them all. There's a bear story, horses, snakes, pretty much a little bit of everything.
Yeah, you cover everything there. Which one was your favorite to write about?
The horse story, it's called With My Family in Our House. That's the novella. I spent obviously a lot more time with that than some of the other ones, so that one was really fun to write. And then the first story in the collection is called Herring Run, and that one, like the whole story just kind of hit me all at once, and I wrote that, I think, in a day. I just wrote the whole thing down.
Wow.
So that one was fun to write, too.
Awesome. I think you were going to read a little bit from Herring Run. Were you going to read for us? Yeah?
Do you want that now?
Yeah, of course.
Cool. It's the first story in the collection. This is kind of like the middle part, so I'll give you kind of the beginning. The main character is Gino. He loves to fish. He doesn't usually try to catch herrings. And then this part picks up where he's kind of at the stream waiting for the herring to run upstream, and he's at this spot that he found. So the steady sound of the water flowing against the rocks was hypnotic. The sound of moving water had always been soothing to Gino, but with the stream high and the rocks poking out above the surface, the sound was pure heaven. It was easy to get lost in the dull, relaxing sound of the water as it shifted and bubbled and flowed in the same sections over and over again. But then the sound of the water changed, and Gino, always alert for new sounds in the water, stood up. The ocean was about a mile downstream in that direction. The water didn't look different at first, but it sounded different. He reeled in his line and kept his eyes downstream. The smooth, wavy, glass-like surface of the water rippled. At first, the movement was slow and sporadic, rippling at random places in the flowing stream. But the longer he watched, the more constant the ripples and splashes became. Soon the whole surface of the stream was bouncing and splashing as it moved toward him. This was his chance. He was going to catch quite a few herring, he thought. He stood still and quiet, not sure not to scare the fish away, watching and waiting for the right time to cast. The fish drew closer, and he could see them now, flashes of silver as they migrated upstream. Gino shifted his attention from the water downstream to the area right in front of him. When the first of the fish passed him, he'd cast his line. The number of fish caught would only depend on how long the run lasted and how many times he was able to get his cast out. As shimmering silver beneath the water approached, Gino, in what had become as routine to him as walking, tipped the pole back and cast his line. The lure landed exactly where he'd intended, right in the middle of the stream where the bulk of the herring were sure to pass. He let it sit there a while, flicked back and forth gently every so often to keep them interested, but he didn't think he needed to. The herring came, and he watched them swim past, close to where he was standing, but his attention was focused on the middle of the stream, where the line disappeared beneath the water. There was a large group of fish there. They were swimming hard upstream, then stopped at his bait and sniffed around. But there was no bite, no gentle tug that told him a fish had tested the lure. Gino was intrigued. He'd never seen fish behave this way before. Usually, a fish would see bait and take a bite. Rarely did he have a whole group of fish sniff around the bait without actually chomping down. The group of fish around his bait grew. Gino noticed the herring weren't swimming upstream any longer. They had all stopped. Not a single one passed him. They were all swimming around his bait. "What the hell?" Gino said. It had been years since he was surprised while fishing. He'd assumed he'd seen everything there was to see when it came to fish. Salt and fresh water. The fish bunched together and twisted over and around each other. The surface of the water undulated and warped and spun up and down, but only in the single concentrated spot where his lure was located. It was as if the entire herring population of the Atlantic was there around his lure. Gino did the only thing he could think of. He pulled and played his lure back and forth, hoping to get a bite that would break up the massive school of fish. He felt a tug at the end of his line, a bite. He pulled the pole back slowly, gently, hoping to get the hook set before reeling in. But whatever was on the other end of the line pulled against him, too strong to be a herring. Gino didn't like to give up on something once he'd hooked it, so he leaned back a little and gripped the reel tighter. Again he pulled back, this time reeling as he did so, but whatever was on the other end pulled against him. The water splashed and spun as he pulled, churning against his tugging and reeling. Gino couldn't get the lure, and whatever was attached to the end of it, to move any closer to him. The water spun faster, like a whirlpool, forming itself in this slow-moving stream. Gino took a step forward. The water began to rise. The whirlpool was growing, lifting up, the water churning as it rose. Gino found himself knee-deep in the water while it grew in front of him. The whirlpool moved fast around in a circle and up towards the sky, growing taller until it was over his head. He should have gotten out of the stream and as far away from it as he could, but his body wouldn't move. Instead, Gino stood looking up at the immense column of water as it spun. Inside, he could still see the herring swimming in an endless circle as the tower of water reached above the trees surrounding the stream. "Holy shit," Gino said, staring up at the water. He knew nothing natural could have caused this. There was something very wrong with this place or these fish.
Nice.
Excellent.
Now, do you
fish
yourself?
Scary fish. Scary
right,
fish.
Right?
Yeah. I like that you're taking something that's not traditionally scary and made it scary.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to do with a lot of them, is just take like a normal
mm-hmm.
thing and kind of try to make it a little scarier. So.
Yeah, I mean, I have to ask, again, as one horror writer to another, I wrote my book Pede many, many years ago, because giant centipedes is the one animal on the planet that I really don't like. I mean, do you have a specific animal that really creeps you out?
I wouldn't say it creeps me out, but sharks always bother me because... you know, they could be down there in the water, and if you're in the ocean, you can't really see too deep in there, and they could be swimming around
mm-hmm.
a little bit too close when you realize.
Well, Xena has a great a great way to avoid. Just don't go in the water. Just stay out. Just don't go in the water. So sharks do not scare me at all. I'm nervous in water anyway, I have to say, but just don't go in the water. Sharks ain't going to get, unless obviously you're unfortunate enough to encounter a Sharknado, and we've all seen that documentary, and they do happen.
Oh,
they do happen.
So weird.
But yeah, it's funny. I remember, fondly, the very first adult horror book I ever read was The Rats by James Herbert when I was back in middle school. You know, I was probably about 11 at the time. And again, he grew up in the bomb sites of London. They're just post-war where the rats just ran rampant. And that's where he got that from. And it was obviously made his name based on that. But I always wanted to write, you know, homage to James Herbert. I was a big fan, and it took me a lot of years to come up with my creature that I wanted. Because you think so many have been done, all the scary ones have been done to death, you know. You've got spiders. You've got, I mean, one of my favorite movies as a kid was Them, the one about the giant ants in the New Mexico desert. Brilliant. I mean, you know, I'd love to see that one remade, actually. I mean, the effects were, they were just big, giant papier-mâché ants, to be honest with you. But it was a scary film. It's just these giant ants, and they made this funny sort of noise, and so you knew they were coming. But it was great. You know, so I'm going to have to get myself a copy of this book, Joe, because I'm a big animal horror fan.
Awesome. Yeah, I think you'll like it.
Spiders for me, they just terrify me, especially tarantula. I mean, I do admit, James, when your daughter had her little pink-toed tarantulas, they were kind of cute.
Yeah.
But Yeah, I'm terrified of spiders. I really am. They're just something. Yeah. Just they come from the pits of hell. They do. They really do. They just crawled right up.
And, I like them. I don't like spiders.
My wife is scared of spiders, so I'm always the one that she calls wherever I am in the house. If she's screaming my name, I know it's because I got to go get a spider. So
yeah. I remember one time there was this, and you know, when you're scared of spiders, they just become huge no matter how big or small they were. So in my memory, this thing was like fist size. I'm sure it really wasn't, but in my mind it was. And I was the only grown up at the time in the house, and there was two children, and I'm like, I have to be the adult. I have to kill the spider, or, you know, get rid of the spider or something. But panic took over, and I don't know what happened, but I ended up on a chair with boots that came up to like my knees, a flashlight in one hand, and I don't know what I had in the other, but every time the spider would move, I would scream. So that was the best I could do. No, I didn't. I couldn't move. I was like frozen, but, you know, my mom brain said, you have to kill the spider. You have to be the adult. And yeah, all I could do was scream when it moved. And I don't remember what happened, but, it must have, I must have got rid of it. I don't know. It's still there. It's still in the house. I don't know.
It's moved
somewhere
in.
So, yeah. So definitely for me, I remember one author that I just love. He wrote a book that had spiders in it, and I'm like, yeah, I'm gonna pass on that one. I just can't do it. So yeah. Now, what other things do you like to write? Do you have a different genre in the you know, like ghosts or
kind of just like whatever comes to me. The novel I just finished working on is like more cosmic horror, but I tried to write like a haunted house story book too. So I just try to, you know, paranormal, whatever comes to mind. And that's what I tried to do in this book too, is not just focus on like just cosmic horror or just paranormal stuff, but to kind of give a little bit of everything, so that there's a different type of horror for whoever. Whatever you like.
Right. Now, with what James said about writing his peed novel, because that, you know, giant centipedes are kind of what freaks him out. What do you think, what freaks you out the most in the horror genres? Like for me, it's haunted houses, a haunted or a demon or something that terrifies me.
Like ghosts and stuff, but I think now it's more, I think it's because I'm older and I have kids now, like it's the human monsters, like,
these
things could
actually
happen. It's not the paranormal stuff anymore. It's like those things that could actually happen. Somebody could actually be out there thinking these things and doing these things.
Yeah, that is, you know, I try hard not to think about that kind of stuff. Whenever you hear of a, you know, a serial killer or something like that, it's always, oh, he was such a nice guy, or, you know, somebody in a neighborhood that you just don't think. So I try not to, because I'm already a big wuss, so I wouldn't want to, you know, be even more scared of things.
Right.
Because I was watching one of those, I think it was one of those ghost hunter type shows, and they were spending I think it was 3 nights at this, oh goodness, I'm gonna totally mess up this story, but it was this I think it was a hotel room or that this guy had killed this woman, and he like cooked her on the stove, but he was there for like 3 nights with this dead person that he was cooking. And I don't know. I try to think of what his mind, you know, like what is, and it just scares the crap out of me. I'm like, oh my god.
To be fair, actually, maybe just room service was terrible. So what am I going to? I'm going to eat the wife. Be honest. I think we've all been there. We've all been in those hotels where I can't face another room service steak. So I'm going to kill and cook and eat the wife. So I think that's fair enough. Be honest, that's a fair comment.
Well, if you've been there, James, I think maybe you're just picking the wrong women. I mean, I'm hoping that the wrong hotels.
I think that's what it's been. I used to be on the road a lot and spent a lot of time in a lot of hotel rooms. And it's no matter where you go, certainly over in England, no matter what part of the country you're in, I think it's the same people that make the room service food, and it's always terrible. You know, by the time it gets here, it's stone cold. You know, it's just like, oh, you know, I spent far too long eating that crap, you know, so, which is why, you know, I don't get excited about staying in hotels anymore. Excuse me, COVID alert.
Oh gosh. So, what are you working on now, Joe?
I'm finishing up a novella. I have a novella coming out in November, also from D&T Publishing. It's the first in a series called the Contact series. So I just finished up the second book, and I'm working on the third book of that series now.
And in the introduction that I did, it said that you're a horror book reviewer at horrorbound.net. Tell us a little bit about that.
So a couple of years, like I guess it's 4 years ago now, Charlotte, who runs the website, she had kind of just always done it herself, and she was looking to expand it and kind of bring in more people. So now there's a team of people, and we write horror reviews. It's positive horror reviews, so there's no bad reviews on the site. But if we watch a movie or read a book that we like, we write up a review and post it. And there's some really great reviews on there, and the team that she put together is really good. They all love to horror, and they read and they write these reviews, and they're just really, really good.
Now, speaking of reviews, I saw a I don't know if you can call it a argument or disagreement or what have you online not too long ago about, you know, just writing happy reviews, just writing the good stuff. But, you know, I think that in a constructive way, you know, if you don't like something or, you know, I don't think there's anything really wrong with that. But at the same time, I mean, like if you were to read a book and you hated it for whatever reason, would you just decide not to write a review on that book?
Yeah, I don't review it. I think it's fine if people want to do that. If they read a book and they didn't like it and they want to write a review, I think that's fine. I think reviews are for readers and not necessarily for writers, because a writer, we're going to write what we write, and the reviews are there to help readers decide if they want to read the book or
mm-hmm.
not. So, yeah, me personally, I don't like to write a negative review, so I'm not going to go, you know, hop on Amazon and bash a book for 200 words or whatever. But
yeah, I have to say, I have 6 poetry books out. And when I got my first bad review, I was like, I've made it. I mean, I was excited. I was. You know, I mean, it was, I say it was silly, but he was comparing me to some poet from like 200 years ago. And, you know, I know whoever this person was. I don't even know. So I was like, well, you know, I'm not this old Indian poet. You're right. So I didn't really take it too personally, but at the same time, that somebody took their time to, you know, write a review on Amazon about how lousy my book was, I was excited.
They bought it and they read it too. So
exactly, yeah. So
and if you pick any book and you look at the reviews, you know, Stephen King has 1-star reviews on his book. So everybody has their own taste. And
That's something
too. People like stuff, so.
I have read awful reviews before that I, you know, actually I'm like, oh, I don't know if I want to read this. And then when I do, I'm like, wow, were they reading something entirely different than I was? Because that was amazing.
Yeah.
So I don't know. They're very, you just never know. And I guess you can't judge a book solely on the reviews. And that's why I say let people write what they're going to write. People get something different out of, you know, everything. And people, but I think in this day and age that we're in, you're not allowed to have a differing opinion. So we all have to just, So, I applaud you for writing reviews when it's so hard as an author to get reviews in the first place. So that's what was the last movie you reviewed? Anything good coming out?
So I don't watch much horror, actually, being a horror writer. I read a lot of it, but I just I'll watch a horror movie here and there. So the last movie I think I reviewed on the site was Hellraiser. And I think I reviewed it along with the book Hellbound Heart, kind of comparing and contrasting them. And I think that was a couple of years ago. So I don't usually review movies too much.
Speaking James's language, he's a huge Hellraiser fan.
Absolutely, yeah. In fact, obviously on my sick bed, flicking through. I think they're on. Is it Prime? Might be on Prime. There's the first three Hellraisers, so I couldn't sat and watched the first one. It's still good. I mean, it still stands up after all
the
this
first
time.
One is so good.
Oh, I remember seeing that back in the day. Was it 1987? And I remember it was back in the old day. I lived in a small town. I got home from work, and they had a little video store. And I was just browsing through. I only picked it out because I don't think I'd heard of Clive Barker at that point. And I picked it out because the only name I recognised on it was Andy Robinson, who played the Scorpio killer in Dirty Harry. So I thought I recognised the name, and the picture on the front looked all right. And I sat and watched that, and it was just mesmerizing. It was just so wonderfully unique, you know, having come through the 80s with all the slashes and the Freddy Kruegers and the Jason and and suddenly it was just so, I actually got to the end, rewound it because obviously it was VHS, and watched it again, and I don't know how many times I've seen it over the years, but it's even now, even like the other night, you know, it's still, the impact is just, it's so visceral, it's so, obviously, that underlying BDSM sexual tone that goes with it. But it's just, the whole thing is just so wonderful. You know, Claire Higgins is an absolute delight in it. You can tell she had a lot of fun making that movie.
Yeah.
I think I might have to watch it over again.
You should.
You made it sound so amazing. Yeah. I know. I think I only watched it. You told me I had to. You said you weren't going to. You did this
often
to me. You're not.
I would not speak to you again. Yeah. Yes, I did. I did say that.
So I watched it. Yeah. I enjoyed it. I did. But I loved
it's good
all
too,
those
that Clive Barker was involved because he wrote the book and then directed. I think he directed the movie also. So you know that it's kind of his vision. Yeah,
I mean, Hellraiser 2 was good. I mean, that followed straight on from that. But, and much maligned, but I actually like Hellraiser 3, Hell on Earth. I really enjoyed that. I mean, they started getting ropey after that, to be honest. But the first three, absolutely brilliant. Yeah, absolutely brilliant. But the first, I think they made it on like $1 million budget, which even then was a shoestring. But it just worked. I mean, there's been talk of them rebooting it, which I think would be awful. But there's a talk of a TV series coming up, I think, on Netflix.
I saw that.
But again, as long as they don't just remake it, don't just remake the first one because it'd be terrible. It's classic. It's like, you know, if they remade Jaws or The Exorcist, just don't do that.
Wow. Yeah.
Leave it.
Yeah.
Leave it alone. Okay, but the CGI be better than that. But and you fight. Same with Jaws. I mean, you know, you watch it now, and it's not about how realistic the shark looked, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I've heard it said before that you know, one of the best parts of the movie is Quint's monologue on the USS Indianapolis, and that is spine chilling, and it's just him related, and it's just so incredibly well done. That is probably one of the best scenes in a movie ever, I think.
Right, because it's about the characters. It's not necessarily about the monster.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's also building a picture of what the shark
right.
can do. You know, it's like
yeah.
it's out there, and these things, they, I mean, again, it was a true story. They decimated all the sailors who fell into the sea. excuse me. But it's just the way it was told, the way it was written. It was just, and obviously the scene, you know, the scenario, they're in a small boat, bobbing around and at the mercy
yep.
of this monster fish, you know, back to fish again. So.
Awesome. Well, Joe, I think we are just about out of time for our
first okay.
segment. I know. But I thank you so much for coming on. And before we let you go, give us a plug where we can find you online.
Sure. I'm on Twitter. It's at Joe Scipione Zero, the number zero. And then my website is just www.joescipione.com.
Awesome. And for all of our listeners out there, go out. Oh, my gosh. Sorry about that. Go out there and find Zoo, Eight Tales of Animal Horror by Joe Scipione. And I can't wait to have you back again. Thank you so much, Joe.
Awesome. Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Joe. You have a great
Bye.
Evening. Okay. Bye-bye.
You too.
Bye-bye. See, a man after my own heart. I've always loved animal horror. I mean, it's
yeah.
funny. I'm obviously the James Herbert, the Rats trilogy. I was a quadrilogy. I think there's a fourth that came out that was, I believe, I actually have a copy of it somewhere, a graphic novel. And then there's the guy in Smith who we published many years ago.
Yeah,
The crabs. He had a whole series about killer crabs. There was one, and I wish I could remember who. I think it's still on Amazon about, there's a beetle called the Devil's Coach Horse, which is a particularly evil-looking beetle. And it was about them. There's a whole swarm of them killing people. And then there's been frogs. I remember we're sitting up late one Saturday night watching a horror movie about killer rabbits. literally, you name it. I mean, you name it, rabbits and snakes and spiders and ants and, Yeah, I mean, funny enough, I'm actually halfway through. I really need to finish it, actually. My second creature novel, which is about naked mole rats. Look them up. They are they are a fascinating animal, but they just look do look like they have burrowed out of the pit of hell, to be honest. they're just ugly fucking little things. But they're fascinating. They're the only sort of mammal that lives in they live in a colony, like a colony structure, but it's, the social structure is similar to ants. They have a queen.
Interesting.
They have a queen that queen that reproduces, and they are also again for their small. I think they're actually more closely related to beavers, funnily enough, than rats. But relatively speaking, they're the longest lived. Mammal, you know, for size and what have you, you know, so they these things mm-hmm. live like 15, 16 years, which for one of them things is a lot of, they do research on them for, the other thing fascinating is they never get cancer. They never succumb to cancer. There's something in their genetic
naked
makeup
mole
that prevents that. I've actually done my research for the book, which I really need to finish it. I really, really do.
I didn't even know you were writing it. Who knew? Yeah.
Well,
I'm
now
still
you
waiting
do.
On the Silverado. I'm still waiting on the Silverado Care Posse book. There.
I know those two. I mean, Silverado Springs is probably the first. I need to get that finished off. That just needs another good going through, to be honest. The Naked Mole needs finishing. So that'll be my next two. I really need to make time to finish these before I get COVID and die. You know, it'd be terrible. Anywho, enough of that. It's time for another box of wine next season, so we will be right back.
Panic Room Radio Show is brought to you by Hellbound Books Publishing, purveyors of all manner of dark fiction. You can find the publisher, along with links to all of their available works across platforms at hellboundbookspublishing.com. In the mood for something steamy to read? Check out erotica author Jennifer Lynn at jenniferlynnerotica.com. You can find James and Xtina at their respective websites, jameslongmore.com for James and darkpoetprincess.com for Xtina. Don't forget to follow The Panic Room on social media, Facebook, unofficial The Panic Room Radio Show, our Venmo channel with all of our previous shows, The New Panic Room Radio Show, and come visit us at our website, www.panicroomradio.com.
Just like the sunny morning.
Well, I'd bring you still with us, Xena.
I am. And I only panic just a little bit now, thinking that you might not be there. Just a little bit.
Would I let you go? It's funny if I actually, it's my turn to the alcoholic. And I because I
yeah,
still
yeah.
a little bit bit rock. I swear by it. I go to the liquor store and I buy the cheapest, nastiest, roughest brandy I can get. I've got this bottle, it's like a litre bottle for $11. And the guy, even the guy at the liquor store looked at me like I was just trash buying it. But it's funny, I actually tried it years ago and I thought, I'll treat myself, I'll buy it. And I'm ill and, you know, if I'm going to be drinking some brandy, I'll get a nice one, you know, and I got a nice smooth one. No, it was terrible. It didn't do the, you know, but it's rough. I think it just like scours, it just kills everything, just disinfects everything. But it's very soothing.
Yeah.
Say, you know, and so I'm if I start feeling a little bit merry, then I'm supping on cheap shit brandy. And I've got a proper brandy glass, and that's how all I need. I could do with a cigar, and I can be all sort of put my monocle in, and away we go.
You know, a couple of weeks ago, it might have been a little longer by now, we went on one of those little trips we went to a wine tasting. And this is the second one me and the boyfriend have gone on. And we are just the more expensive wines.
Mm-hmm.
I hate them. I was like, this is awful. And, you know, they have all these amazing names for them, and they sound so wonderful. And we picked out, I think there was like, I don't know, 5-6 of them, maybe more. And, they sounded so good. They smelled nice. Ugh, I hated. I couldn't find anything to like of any one of them. I couldn't. I was like, man, am I doing? And now my daughter, you know, she's 24, and I guess she's a seasoned wine drinker.
Of course.
She's like, you gotta do it like this, and you have to sniff it, and you have to, you know, and she's just, and I'm like, what? What?
Yeah.
You don't just, you know.
I mean, to be fair, I and no word of a lie, you know, you're speaking to a guy who will choose a wine based on the pretty picture on the label. If it's got an animal on it, there's a good chance I'm going to buy it. But there's a great one, actually. It's called Yellowtail, and it's Australian, and has kangaroo on the label. And I that's how I, you know, and it's not a bad little wine, actually. But it's like, you know, $7 or $8 a bottle at Kroger. So it's not really Chateau Leneuf or anything, you know, Chateau Lafay or whatever it is. It's, there's a lot of snobbery about wine, you know, all these vintages and... And it's funny, when I worked for Toyota years ago, my boss was a bit of an old, you know, old school old boy. He knew his way around wine, I have to say. He could pick out a damn good one. And he would drink, you know, £50, £60, £70 bottle of wine.
We
would all get together. It was like a team dinner or whatever, and he would get the wine list. And to be fair, and because it wasn't, you know, it was on the company dime, so, but he could pick out some absolutely phenomenal wine. It was actually him that I didn't know there was such a thing as dessert wine.
That sounds good.
And, seriously, you get some nice, because obviously, you know, usually, you know, you finish your wine before you start dessert, because nothing worse than something sweet and then red wine, because that's just, ugh. But with a dessert wine, it tends to be sweet anyway. And, you could pick out a gorgeous dessert wine that went beautiful with, you know, your chocolate cake or, you know, your whatever pudding you're having. So there you go.
Nice.
But, we used to rack up some serious dinner bills.
Oh, guess what time it is?
It's not. Is
it?
It
is. Okay. It is. It is.
Looks like it's time to review something. Oh, no.
Well, that must be the lovely Samantha then.
It is. How are you guys?
Yay.
We're good. We missed you. How have you been?
I'm doing good. It's been a long day today, but I'm doing good.
Yo, do you know, hasn't it just? It's been a long day all week, to be honest.
Yes, it's been a very long week. I really agree with that.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Yes. So what have you got? What have you got for us this evening?
So I went with a new author that I haven't read anything by, and it is called Clockwork Girl by Athena Villaverde, and she is an author that Carlton Mellick actually had recommended, and it's a really short book. It's broken up into three sections, and there is Caterpillar Girl, Clockwork Girl, and Beehive Girl. They're all three separate stories. They're bizarre stories. And I really liked them. I liked Clockwork Girl the most. I really empathized with her character and really felt sad when I read it. Caterpillar Girl just shocked me, and I wasn't expecting any of that. And Beehive Girl wasn't my favorite, but it was an interesting premise. And I felt like all the stories, they were just wonky and crazy. And I really enjoyed her as an author. She has another book called Starfish Girl, and I've been told that it's really good. So I'm going to read it. But I gave this one, Clockwork Girl, I gave it a 5-star. I really liked it. I thought it was a good recommendation.
Now, do you like Bizarro? Is that something you're, into?
I do, but, there's a level. Like, it can't be, some stuff is too bizarre for me. But it's funny because I don't ever know if it is until I start reading it. And people will be like, but you've read, the Baby Jesus Butt Plug. It can't get any more bizarre than that. And it's like, oh, but it can, and sometimes it's just too much.
Yeah, you really have to read James's Colton Forche. That was my first experience with Bizarro. And, I thought it was amazing. I was like, wow. And after you kind of suspend your, what you think is too bizarre or whatever, you're like, wow, you can do anything with Bizarro, which is kind of cool. So, yeah.
Well, it's very much gloves off. You can do whatever you want. In horror, you still have to adhere within certain boundaries. But with Bizarro, you don't. And I really enjoy, Colton was just, it's the only book I've written without a plan. I started at the beginning. The actual opening line came to me in a dream, funnily enough. And it just evolved. Christina knows what the first line is. And it just evolved naturally into this great, great little story. And it's thick and twisted, but it's very very dark humor. I mean, that is meant to, a lot of good Bizarro is very tongue in cheek, very dark humor. I describe it as if Monty Python wrote horror, then you'd get Bizarro, because it is just very out there and no rules. But it works. It's great. It's great. So you have to remind me. I know I haven't sent you to Nebrin yet, and I'm terrible. I'm a terrible person. I must get a copy of Colton Forche to you to review. I think you'll enjoy it.
Yes, absolutely. I'd love to read it.
It's on the air now. He can't take it back now. It's out there. So
no,
yes,
I can. I can always edit this bit out in post, so it never happened.
He won't. He says that every week, but it never happens.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever taken anything out in post, to be honest with you. It's fun. It's not even when we muck up and some idiot presses the wrong buttons, it's all part of the fun. It really is.
It is. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much, Samantha. I can't wait until next week to see what you have for us.
Yes, thank you, Don. I'll see you all next week.
Okay, bye-bye.
Night.
Bye-bye.
If I pull my finger out, it could be one of mine. So I'll try and make an effort. So what have we got coming up next, Xena, in this evening of excitement?
In our next guest, we have Bram Stoker finalist and 2016 Stabby Award winner, Mercedes M. Yardley.
I have to tell you, James, I too am a fan of the Naked Mole Rat.
So you do what, sorry?
there are pictures of heavily pregnant naked mole rats on the internet. And I used to send them to my friend when she was pregnant with her twins. So, you know, she still is my friend. But another bizarre creature I really love is the rosy-lipped bat fish, if you haven't looked at those.
They do sound familiar.
Yeah, it will make your day to see them. Hi, you guys. Thanks for having me on.
No, thank you for coming on. I really appreciate you joining us. And I have to say, and it was only relatively recently that I realized Mercedes was a proper name. Obviously the guy who the car company, everything, you know, I thought, well, you know, what on earth possessed him to call his daughter after his car company? And I didn't realize, seriously, that it was the other way around. So, and obviously I should have known, because obviously Mercedes McCambridge was the voice of Pazuzu in The Exorcist. So I should have known, really. It's a phenomenal. I wish I knew you could do that. I'd have called my daughter sort of, you know, Ford minivan or something.
Well, it's not the same.
It's not.
My father's name is Harley. So it's just a terrible family joke.
Oh, fantastic. Love it. Love it.
I actually do love the name Mercedes. I think that,
yes.
You know, if I ever had like a bad girl persona, it'd definitely be Mercedes. I'd be Mercedes. That's
Mrs. Mercedes.
Girl, hot girl name.
Your dominatrix name, Mistress Mercedes Strict. And
I like it.
You know, the stories write themselves from there, really.
I usually just go by Miss Murder. It's easier.
Oh, I like that. Yeah. Nobody will mess with you with that. So in your bio there, it said a Stabby Award. I had to look this up. I even asked James, like, what's a Stabby Award? You know, it sounds so cool. I mean, do you get like a...
Yeah, I've never heard of it.
Yeah.
What is it?
I know.
Yeah,
we need...
Well, I have it right here hanging above my desk. It's this huge medieval dagger with my name and the name of the book engraved in it. And I use it all the time to, you know, threaten people or, like, open my mail. It just hangs right above my desk. And it is the coolest award. I mean, the Bram Stoker Award is amazing. I'm really happy with it. It's a haunted house. It's a lot of fun. It has a door that opens and closes. But this dagger is just so useful and different. They asked me not to bring that when I go and talk to schools and stuff. They're like, please don't bring the dagger, even though it's an award.
I would bring it everywhere.
How did you win that? What was it for?
Reddit. The Stabby Award is a Reddit award. And so my publisher at the time entered my book and it was voted on, and Reddit can't agree on anything, but they seem to agree that this book was really awesome. So that made me really happy. So now I have
to trust it. Congratulations. Well done. Good for you.
Thank you. I just strap it to my thigh. Just, you know, go out in the streets.
Yes. Yes. Definitely. But you're here to talk to us about your book, Darling. It releases in August.
Yes.
Darling Has Its Demons. Is that like a name of a town, Darling?
Yes. It's the name of a town.
Awesome. Tell us a little bit about it.
Well, it's my first Southern Gothic novel. It's about a woman named Charisse who left town when she was 16 years old with her boyfriend. She was pregnant. And then life happens, and she's forced to go back to this town with her two children in tow. She's estranged from her husband, and the town is evil itself. Like, everyone is twisted, everyone is dark, and she's terrified to go back, that she's broke and doesn't have any choice. And meanwhile, pieces of children are turning up hither and yon in the air. And while she's there, kind of trying to find her footing among this dark, scary area that she didn't want to go back to, her daughter goes missing. So it's kind of the town kind of cannibalizes itself trying to find out where her daughter is, and there's a killer on the loose, and it's very dark, but it's also very prettily written. It's not something I think my mother should read. Most of my work my mother shouldn't read, but it's grim, but it's also nice. You won't read it and just want to, like, jump off of something, hopefully.
It sounds amazing, and now I can't wait for August, because when you make out that signed copy, that's XTINA.
Yeah, heart.
Yes, yes. Awesome. And I think you had an excerpt to read for us.
Yes, I have a very short excerpt.
Awesome.
And just a trigger warning for those listening who are sensitive, it does deal with childhood death because, you know, it's a child serial killer.
Right.
They found the body in a tool shed, long abandoned, overgrown with cypress vines. Somebody had cut the tangles away from the door. Somebody had slipped something infinitely precious inside. He was a little boy with dark hair, at least after he had been identified. His mother had told the police that he had dark hair. He was found with no hair at all, his head perfectly shorn and smooth, like a grotesque baby doll. His hands were perfect, soft and clean. Only his broken nails belied what had happened to him. He was combed and brushed and studied. His thin legs with surprisingly muscular calves, the pointy ischium bones pressing sharply against the skin in his bottom. He was a child who was meant to run and jump and pick through fields and old furrows of ground. But here he was, not a mark on him. The only thing missing was his hair and his breathing and his spirit. The police asked for his name. His mother couldn't answer. She just said, "My little bird, my little sparrow." And she wept and wept and wept. They asked about his father, but she had no answer to that. They asked if the little boy had any medical conditions, if he had imaginary friends, if he hung out with any of the older boys who liked to ride their bikes down to the dusty streets and throw firecrackers at old windowless stores. They asked if she thought that he had shed his dinosaur shirt and tiny red shoes somewhere and crawled inside the tool shed himself. They asked her if there was a reason his heart should stop or when he had shaved his head. They finally, hesitantly, brought up the question they'd been avoiding. Was there anyone who would want to hurt such a beautiful, perfect little boy? Later, one of the police would think back on this day and shake his head grimly. How hopeful they were. How naive. They found a body and thought, what a horrible tragedy. This poor boy. This poor mother. Really, that can't be much worse than to mysteriously lose your child. There can't be much worse than to mysteriously lose your child. They were touched, certainly. But they were just thinking of it as a body. They certainly weren't thinking of it as the first.
Wow. That was really good. Wow. And, you know, I can't...
Well, that's it. I was enjoying that. I was so into that.
I have to ask, you know, writing something like that, did you ever bother yourself when you were writing it? You're like, oh man, you know, because whenever you're watching a movie or reading a book and, you know, you get to like maybe a child or an animal, you know, I'm like, no, they can't kill the kid. No, they can't kill the animal. You know, and I freak all out. So when they actually do it, I'm like, wow, I wonder, you know, did they feel, when you're writing it, was there ever a point you're like, oh gosh, I don't know. I don't know if I should do, should I kill the kid?
You know, you always wonder if you should cross that line, but most of my work comes from a place of, like, I lost two of my children that had passed away, so a lot of it comes from places of that loss, and so it's kind of, it's a way to work through it and process it, but yeah, I'm not afraid to go in some of these places as long as I really try to do it respectfully and not, you know, gratuitously or grotesquely. But yeah, I mean, of course I disturb myself. Or I write because I'm disturbed, maybe. I don't know. But, yeah. You know, you always wonder. Like, they tell you not to kill the dog, but sometimes you have to kill the dog. It just, the story doesn't feel right without it. And, yeah, you just have to take that plunge, and it's terrifying, really.
Yeah, and it's definitely true, I think. Especially for, I believe anyway, for horror writers, you know, and we've had so many horror writers on the show, and they are just the nicest people, the sweetest people. And I'm like, man, you wrote that? That's, like, disturbing. But I think that once you write it, you get it down on paper, you're purged of, you know, that demon for at least for a little bit, you know. And I think that we're better for it than the people who can't write about it and get it out, you know.
Right, exactly. We're well adjusted, and we're not afraid to talk about these things. When you go in like a workshop and you're shopping some scary story or whatnot, like, it's just, it's free therapy for all of us, basically, you know.
Yes, it's,
and then we
it's like confronting your demon. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
If, you know, I have a friend that says, it's romance writers who scare me, because she says they don't talk about, you know, the
yes.
things, they keep it all inside and just, you know.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's horrible. We just hash it out. We think about it. We think about it all the time. So we kind of we're well adjusted. You know, horror
yeah.
did really well during the pandemic.
Yeah,
absolutely. I think the romance writers, if they would just kill somebody occasionally in their books, they would be a lot better for it. I think.
Well, you've got to think about it. I mean, I think it's funny. Obviously, you know, horror writers. We do get a bad press about, you know, but it's the romance
yeah.
writers that really, you know, they're peddling an unrealistic view of. I mean, the whole romance thing and you know, love and you know, maybe I'm being cynical, but it's horseshit.
Sometimes.
You know, and all this wonderful, they are creating an unrealistic template for people to follow. Oh, I'll do it, and I'll fall in love, and I'll go and live in the Hallmark movie sort of little Christmassy town and blah, blah. Life ain't like that. Life is not that. Horror, at least we face our demons, you know, you walk into the taboo with our eyes wide open. And as Mercedes said, you know, we're happy to talk about things that most people, you know, don't even think about. But we face
yeah,
it
yeah.
and we face our fears and the darkness. And I think you're right. I think we're far brighter. But I think there's probably no more miserable people than romance authors, to be honest.
Yeah, it's very true. You know, I do read romance occasionally, and you know, our eyes meet across the room, and there's just, you know, this fire.
Well,
and I'm like, really?
I'll tell you,
this
I mean, true,
really...
true story. I always used to think that was bullshit. All this, oh, love at first sight. My second ex, my second wife. That's how we met. It was in a nightclub
yeah.
in York, and our literally eyes met across the room, and it was just like instant, and it's like, wow.
Wow, that is interesting.
But look
yeah.
how that turned out. So,
you
know,
I wasn't going to say.
I maintain my cynicism.
I was going to say, was there like chemicals, you know, were you drinking, were there drugs involved? I mean, could have been that.
I was pissed out of my tree on cheap lager, yeah. This was a night out in England. Yeah, damn right I was drunk. Yeah, absolutely.
So
it could have
been the alcohol talking. Yeah.
It could have just been the alcohol. I that's what I'm pointing down to, yeah.
But it wouldn't have made as good of a romance novel, though, if you just added the alcohol.
Well, it was like the beginning of a great romance novel. It was just like, you know, it was. Never felt anything like it in my life, and hopefully never will again, to be honest with you.
Okay.
He said, rather cynically. Moving on.
So, yes.
When I saw my husband, I said, I saw him and I thought, I want to marry a man just like him. And we've been
aww.
Married 20 now. Poor sucker.
Oh, that's wonderful. It can work. I'm delighted for you.
Yeah, you have to have a horror writer on one end and a finance guy on the other, and somehow the opposites just make it work.
Ah, that's nice. Where I went wrong, yeah. Mm. See, the problem is that wouldn't work for me because I absolutely have a pathological hatred for accountants, so that really wouldn't work for me.
I thought I did too, but this certain one, I don't know, something about his dimples, I don't know.
Ah, come with the dimples.
Yeah.
The
dimples
won't. Right, that's the dimples, unfold.
So what are you working on now, Mercedes?
I'm shopping around at Short Story Collections. I'm working on a book that is kind of a magical surrealism, very dark witchy story, also about kind of a small town that eats each other alive. And I'm working on a couple of short stories for different anthologies I've been invited to. So I'm excited about lots of things going on. Oh, and I'm also working on a comic book adaptation of my novel Pretty Little Dead Girls that my friend Orion Zangara is doing the graphics for. Stunning.
Wow.
Just he is amazing. So he sends me something pretty much every day, like a new panel, a new piece, and it's so cool to see how that comes out. It's totally different than novels. You know, it's totally different than anything else. So I wrote the script for that, and he's doing all the art.
That is awesome. So many things going on. I feel tired for you. Like, I need a nap just thinking of all the things you have going on. Yeah. But,
three kids, but, yeah.
Yeah, how do you have the time? I mean, wow.
Oh, no, but, I don't sleep. That's the answer.
There you go. One thing caught my attention when you were talking about, you know, small towns, and I have to say, for me, the setting plays a huge part in whatever I'm reading. Like, I like that part, you know, knowing it's a small town or where it's at, or just the feeling, you know. Sometimes the setting can be an actual character as well, kind of like, you know, and that's definitely important for me when I'm reading. I like to see, you know, be able to close my eyes and almost like picture the town or picture, you know, the setting. So I like that. I'll definitely be looking out for your stuff, but like I said, again, XDINA.
Got it.
Right. Now, when you're not writing, do you? What do you like to read?
I read everything. I try to read. My goal is to try and read about 8 books a month. I do like a bingo card. Well, 8 books counts. A book is 150 words or more, so it can be little. I read true crime. I like to read a lot of fiction. I like to read horror, of course. Sometimes romance novels. I just read a really cool book called The Vegetarian. I can't think of who just wrote it, which is a really beautiful, dark, sensual book about a woman in Korea, I believe it's Korea, that decides to go vegetarian, and like it just blows her family's mind. It's tied with like mental illness and all these different things. It's just cool. But I'm always trying to read to kind of fill the well, you know. I read a book today. It's an arc. It's coming out. It's called Effects Vary by Michael Harris Cohen, and it was an exquisitely stunning, beautiful collection of dark short stories that's coming out soon. So that's what I read today. So I try to
today
a lot.
And
today.
And she writes, and she has kids, and man, I'm gonna go wallow in the fact that
you're gonna lie down in a darker room.
Yeah.
You've tired Xtina out. She'll get no sense out of it for Monday now, so thanks for that.
Today I ignored the children so I could read. We're okay.
Oh, well, that's always fun to do. Yes. Mercedes, we are just about out of time, and it flew by way too fast. I think that we could definitely have you on for, like, the whole show. I think we have enough to talk about because this was so much fun. I don't want to let you go, but I kind of have to. So you have to promise to come back again and see us?
I would love to. What a pleasure. I would love to.
Yay, definitely.
Thank you so much for joining us. It's been lovely. Lovely.
For all of our listeners out there, go out in August, look for Darling by Mercedes M. Yardley. And I thank you so much for coming on the show. Yay.
Thank you so much. Have a great night, everyone.
And you. Thank you. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Well, do you know, we do say it every week. The time just flies by. A couple of wonderful guests, and you know, it just is. Yeah, wow. Yeah, it is. It is that time, unfortunately. And I was having a wonderful time. I would have liked to have heard more of her excerpt. Actually, that was just unfolding nicely. Stop, so she teases, but I'm afraid on that note, it is time to say goodnight, Xtina.
Good night, Xtina.
Good night.
Come fly with me, let's fly away. If you can use some exotic booze, there's a bar in far Bombay. Come fly with me, let's fly away. Come fly with me, let's float down to Peru. In Llama Land, there's a one-man band, and he'll toot his flute for you. Come fly with me, let's take off in the blue. Once I get you up there, where the air is rarefied, we'll just fly starry-eyed. Once I get you up there, I'll be holding you so near. You may hear angels cheer, 'cause we're together. Weather-wise, it's such a lovely day. Just say the words and we'll beat the birds down to Acapulco Bay. It's perfect for a flying honeymoon, they say. Come fly with me, let's fly away. Once I get you up there, where the air is rarefied, we'll just glide starry-eyed. Once I get you up there, I'll be holding you so near. You may hear angels cheer, 'cause we're together. Weather-wise, it's such a lovely day. You just say the words and we'll beat the birds down to Acapulco Bay. It's perfect for a flying honeymoon, they say. Come fly with me, let's fly, let's fly. Pack up, let's fly away.